Liza is going to be presenting on assessing the acute impact of new abortion restrictions in Texas, a qualitative policy evaluation. Liza is a senior project manager at Ivis Reproductive Health and a doctoral candidate at the CUNY School of Public Health. She's the current chair of the board of directors of Reproductive Health Technologies Project and a board member of Forward Together. She holds a master of public health from Columbia University. Liza.
Good morning. As Amanda said, my name is Liza Fuentes, and the work I'm going to be presenting today is work that we're doing as part of the Texas Policy Evaluation Project. This is a research collaboration with the University of Texas at Austin and the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and we've evaluated Texas state family planning and abortion policy since 2011. Today I'll be discussing a qualitative study we've conducted as part of our evaluation of HB2, which is the most recent abortion restrictions passed in the state of Texas. And I have no disclosures or conflicts of interest, nor do any of my authors, co-authors. In 2013, the Texas state legislature enacted one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the United States. It had four components, and though the law was challenged in court on October 31st, 2013, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the law would be enforced even as it was being challenged. The parts of this legislation that went into effect the very next day on November 1st, 2013, required physicians performing abortions to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals, restricted the protocol for the use of medical abortion and limited its use to 49 days gestation, and banned abortions after 22 weeks gestation or from the last menstrual period. 12 of 34 abortion providers immediately closed because they did not have admitting privileges. Many of these facilities had patients scheduled for abortion services that same day. And this map just shows the number of abortion providers shortly before the law was enacted versus the day after. And I just wanted to highlight that in South Texas, which is called the Lower Rio Grande Valley region, there were no abortion providers south of Corpus Christi. And you'll see also in central west area of Texas, there were no abortion providers west of San Antonio except for in El Paso, which is the blue dot on the far, far left. So there were big rural regions of Texas that were left without providers. We've measured the immediate effects of HB2 in several ways. For the study shown here, we collected data directly from abortion providers and the number and type of abortions provided in the time periods before and after the law. And we found that in the six-month period after the law was implemented, the state abortion rate declined by 13%, which was more than triple the decline in previous years. For example, from 2006 to 2012, the number of Texas abortions decreased an average of just 3% per year. We also found a 70% decline in the number of medical abortions provided. This is in contrast to the fact that from 2006 to 2012, the number of medical abortions in Texas increased an average of 7% per year. And we also found a small but significant increase in the proportion of abortions provided after 12 weeks gestation. This is important because it may indicate that some women are experiencing delays in obtaining abortion care into the second trimester. We also wanted to assess the acute effects of these restrictions on women seeking abortions. We wanted to know what their experiences were, particularly those women who had appointments that were canceled or were turned away. And we wanted to know how they were able to obtain abortion care or not after clinic closures. We conducted qualitative semi-structured interviews with women who had either had an appointment that was canceled when the law was enforced because of the clinic closures, who sought abortion care at a clinic that stopped providing services after the law was implemented, or was a Texas resident that went to a clinic out of state after the law was enforced. In order to recruit participants, clinic staff obtained women's permission to receive an invitation to participate in an interview, or for clinics that were out of state, they provided Texas residents with a flyer. Of 80 women who either provided contact information or were self-referred, 20 participated in interviews. We gave a $30 gift card to compensate women for their time. And two interviewers conducted a 20 to 40 minute semi-structured phone interview. We transcribed the recorded interviews and conducted a thematic analysis, developing a priori codes based on the interview guide. And I can talk more about methods later if people have questions. This is just to give a snapshot of our participants, ranged in age from 18 to 34. I'll just highlight that for this study, all of the participants were U.S. born. More than half, or 11 of them, had no children. And six of our participants were from the Lower Rio Grande Valley, which we wanted to highlight because this is a rural, low-income region that was left with no abortion providers. So we found that in terms of the immediate effects of HB2, that there was a lot of confusion about where and what kind of services were available immediately after the law was enforced. That many women experienced increased costs for both abortion care and travel time. And many found that there were barriers to medical abortion, which is what many of our participants preferred. Some women, not all, experienced delays in obtaining abortion care. Some women were unable to obtain a wanted abortion. And finally, we found that some women considered self-induction. Women whose appointments were canceled and those who were turned away after clinics closed had similar experiences in that they did not get complete information or referrals from closing clinics. Some got referred to clinic affiliates in other cities, even though there were providers still open in their town, and some got no referral at all. Many women went to the internet to do more research because they didn't know where else they could go, or because the referrals they got required travel or costs they weren't sure that they were able to cover. Women often called several clinics and sometimes went to several appointments at more than one clinic. And this is especially true for women whose appointments were canceled. In the state of Texas, the state of Texas requires an in-person visit to a clinic 24 hours ahead of time or a physician-provided counseling session by phone. And so for women who completed the initial visit, this meant that they may have to start the process over again after their appointment was canceled. Women also sort of were running in circles to figure out not just who was providing services, but if she was eligible for the service that she wanted, depending on her gestational age and her method preference, and if it was logistically possible for her to get to the city where she wanted to go. On the other hand, for some women, this wasn't the case. If there was another provider open in their town, they just called the provider that was there and went to services there. So it really depended on which clinic closes and which were open. And this is just a quote from a woman, age 22. San Elisario is in South Texas in the Lower Grande Valley, and she said, "Like, my heart dropped because I was like, what am I going to do now? I don't know why. I just, like, assumed that was the only clinic. You know, I didn't know there were a lot of clinics, so I was calling around, and every call I made was, 'Oh, we're closed. We don't do that anymore,' and this and that. And I started getting scared, and I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?" Some women spent more money and took more time than they would have before HB2 came down to obtain an abortion. For example, as I said before, women in the Lower Rio Grande Valley saw their travel go from 1 hour to the closest clinic in that region to a nearly 4-hour drive to the nearest abortion clinic, which was in San Antonio. Since clinic appointments were for early morning, many women talked about starting their journey at 3 or 4 in the morning to get to the clinic for their appointment that was several hours away. Or weighing the option of getting a hotel room, which represented an increased cost that not all women could cover. In addition to added cost of travel, women lost wages from time off work if they did not have benefits. For women with salaried employment, they were able to take sick or vacation days, but this didn't represent the experiences of most of the women in our sample. This woman, age 34, from Houston, Texas, actually had to fly out of state to New Mexico because she discovered her pregnancy later on and was affected by the 22-week ban. She says, "No, it wasn't any paid time off. It's just I work for a family-owned company, you know, so if you don't work, you don't get paid. I missed a total of a week, about $600. It doesn't pay that much." After the implementation of HB2, clinics that remained open had to provide medical abortion using a protocol that would require more visits to the clinic and restricted eligibility to women who were 7 weeks pregnant or less. Half of all of our participants stated that they preferred a medical abortion, but 7 were unable to obtain one. The most common reason women gave for this preference is that they preferred to have an abortion in the comfort of their own home, and women also said that they were too averse or afraid of surgical procedure. There were a couple of reasons why women were unable to obtain a wanted medication abortion. First was that it was too many visits. 3 women said they preferred medical but couldn't do it because there would be 4 visits involved after HB2. They said they didn't have the resources to do that much travel or take that much time away from their work or kids. And just to illustrate, after HB2 came down, with the new medication abortion requirements and the already existing 2-visit law in Texas, women would have to make 4 in-person visits to a clinic that was sometimes 3, 4, or 5 hours away. Some women said that they were too far along in the pregnancy to do the pill. So that wasn't necessarily the case for all women in the in the study that HB2 caused that, but for some, it was related to the law. One woman decided to go out of state, actually to Colorado, to avoid making multiple trips to the nearest clinic, which was in Dallas. She figured that if she was going to have to make two trips to Dallas, which is a three-hour drive, for a surgical procedure, she might as well make one trip to Colorado, which is the state where you can obtain a medical abortion in just one visit. And she preferred medication abortion anyway. It's also important to note that some clinics that stayed open stopped providing medical abortion services altogether, so that was the case for her. And one participant was too far along for medical abortion where she eventually went, but it wasn't the case when she had her appointment canceled. And she says, "And when I went in, I knew that I was qualified for that, but they were no longer giving out the pill because they couldn't. My heart was set on, you know, I can go in, get the pill, I can do this at home in the comfort of my own home and everything like that. And that's when I got the phone call, so I had to find somewhere else. And then I was way too far along to get the pill from the second place." So she also had some delays that contributed to that. While some women did not experience delays, some did obtain abortion days or weeks later than they wanted. Delays were for several reasons. Number one was clinic scheduling and logistical challenges in the wake of the enforcement of the law. The requirement that women visit the clinic ahead of time or get phone counseling that has to be from the same physician that provides the abortion, and busy clinic schedules. For some women, the next available appointment after their appointment was canceled was a week later or more, and it had to be a day, of course, when the woman could get a ride or get time off of work, and this ended up turning into more than a week's delay for some women. For some women, trying to weigh the cost of increased travel versus increased costs meant that they called around trying to look for cheaper clinics and experienced delays that way. This woman said, "When I first went in, they said it was $530, but when I went for my evaluation," so she had gone in looking for another place to go after the first place she went was closed, but it was more expensive. So she decided to spend time looking around. And then she actually decided to go back to that place later and said when she went for evaluation, she was already at 12 weeks. So it was more because you have to be 11 weeks or under 12 weeks for it to be $530. So now it's $750. So because I was 12 weeks and 3 days, they charged me $750. But I came up with that. You know, I had to borrow the money and I took out loans, but I came up with that money. So she was pushed past 12 weeks, which is an increased cost. Unfortunately, that was the reason that she was pushed past that time is because she felt she couldn't afford the clinic in the first place, and her original choice was closed. And finally, in our sample, three women decided to carry their pregnancy after seeking abortion care. One woman was clear that she changed her mind about wanting the pregnancy, saying that if she had wanted to keep her appointment for the abortion, she would have made it happen. However, two women did not get an abortion at all after attempting to make an appointment, even though they desired an abortion. For these two women, a lack of information, time, and money led to the decision to carry the pregnancy to term. Both of them had strongly initially preferred medical abortion and had recognized their pregnancy early enough to be eligible, but could not locate a facility within their reach. The quote that I'm about to read comes from one of these women who had initially sought a medical abortion, could not find a provider. She later considered self-induction and then ended up deciding that she would be willing to have an aspiration procedure. She made appointments at two different clinics, anticipating that she would keep the appointment for the one that ended up being most affordable. She didn't have very much money. But both of those clinics canceled her appointment after the HB2 came down. She made a tremendous effort to try to obtain an abortion and just wasn't able. And she says, "I called Dallas, I called San Antonio. I think in Austin and here in Waco they weren't doing anything. And they said they didn't have a surgeon or a doctor for that. They used to have one here. I don't know what happened, but they didn't have one at the time. I also did look at ways to do it myself at home, but it was like either you do it, you might hurt yourself, or you might, you know, hurt the baby. I called back, and I think they told me they weren't doing either, that the government had put a stop to it or something. I was pretty upset, but I just decided I guess I'll have to just ride it out. I didn't know what else to do or who else to call." Some women did consider self-induction, but no one in our sample attempted self-induction. In other arms of our study evaluating this law, we have documented women's attempt to self-induce. It just so happened that in the sample, no one did do that, but many women did talk about their consideration. This woman says, "Me and my sister talked about it. Like, she was the only one that could be there for me, so I told her, this is a lot of money. Is there any other way?" And she's like, "Well, in Mexico, they have this pill." And then we researched that, and they said something that it harmed the women. So very quickly, there are a couple limitations to this study. One is that we do focus on the time period immediately after clinic closures, so it may not reflect women's future experiences after the law is implemented. And I'll note that after the law was implemented, some clinics actually were able to reopen and others closed. And all of these interviews were in English with U.S.-born women, so the experiences of immigrant women are not included here. And it's really relevant in Texas because Texas has inland immigration checkpoints. So women in South Texas who are out of status, who may want to travel to get an abortion, were unable to do so. This is the first study that we know of to interview women affected by abortion restrictions immediately after their enforcement. So it's a new contribution to the understanding of abortion restrictions. And we documented experiences of women who continued their pregnancy after seeking abortion care. This is a population that's difficult or impossible to study using surveillance data or vital statistics. So in conclusion, women faced extreme obstacles. Some women faced extreme obstacles to abortion care. And we think this has important public health impacts. Some women may be delayed past 12 weeks. And though abortion is very, very safe, there are increased risks associated with later abortion. The cost goes up for women. And certainly, even if women are not past 12 weeks, delays in care can be distressing and produce anxiety. Some women continue an unwanted pregnancy, and others consider self-induction. And women who are particularly vulnerable contexts are most affected, for example, those who are unemployed in our study, since restricted access requires additional resources to overcome. I want to acknowledge my co-authors at the Policy Evaluation Project, and I welcome your questions. Thank you. I mean, these were 20 to 40 minute phone interviews, so I wouldn't say that we got a rich context around how does this experience sit with other women's healthcare experiences, right? Like, is this, are women's challenges reflective in other ways that they try to access care? We certainly interviewed women who were already sort of in the throes of other health challenges, which I wasn't able to highlight in this short presentation, so for whom this was just like another added burden, women who were had been hospitalized many times over the past year for reasons separate from this, but they tended to sort of know the healthcare system a little bit better. I can't come on a health literacy, but I will say that a lack of information was certainly a part of women's challenges, right? They just didn't know where other abortion clinics were, and no one told them where they were. And so people spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. We have conducted similar types of interviews with providers, so we'll be analyzing those data. We did 14 open-ended, semi-structured interviews with providers literally within the 2 weeks after the law came down to try to understand providers' experiences, which we know are not easy. And given the way that the law was challenged in court and the way that it came down, there just wasn't a lot of time to prepare a good system, a referral system for women. But that's as far as I can say. Potentially in the future, we can think about that, but every state is different. But I look forward to presenting those results at another time.